News time 8:13. Well, in front of an audience packed into the council chambers, the Summit County Council last night approved a budget for 2018, voting for the first property tax increase that the county has seen in at least 30 years. The county's chief financial officer, Matt Levitt, presented a budget for the coming year at $53.8 million. That includes some $1.6 million to restore the county's fund balances, which have been drawn down. The property tax hike will increase revenues by 27%, amounting to some $3 million for the general fund, $1.1 million for the municipal fund, the latter providing city-type services for the unincorporated county. At the same time, county officials have said that they're only responsible for about 15% of your tax bill. Therefore, the county's tax increase will be between 5 and 7% on a resident's overall bill. The budget and truth and taxation hearing attracted more than 40 people. Among the critics, Josh Cox from Francis suggested holding down the increase in tax revenues to 15%, matching an earlier recommendation from the county manager. He said the tax hike is the result of the county bowing down to Park City.
What I am is I'm a hardworking guy. I've been in this county longer than anybody in this room, probably, when you're considering percentage of life, 100% of my life in this county. It's going to hell because of all the new building, because of Park City ruining it. It's a Democrat stronghold. It's probably the only Democratic stronghold in the whole state. And because of that, we're getting bigger tax increases. Is it a coincidence that now that Summit County is a Democrat stronghold that we get the first tax increase in 30 years? I don't think so. I think it has everything to do with the amount of politics being played in Park City.
Sue Pollard said that Eastside residents don't see many of the county services. She said that she doesn't see a bus and doesn't get curbside trash pickup.
But it's not just this tax, and it's the transportation tax, and it's the waste tax, and it's the, that's what I'm saying. There's the frustration. The middle class is being totally squeezed out of Park City. 100% squeezed out. If I'm poor, oh my God, I'm moving to Park City. I get free housing, I get schools, I get health care, I get mental health care, it's unbelievable what we're giving away. I have free transportation. Why is the bus system such a sacred cow that we can't charge a minimal amount for somebody taking it every day? Why are we not charging our tourists to come in? You're telling me how the tourists are paying for so many things. They're not. I'm paying that food tax. I can't even enjoy going out to dinner without all the new taxes on our restaurants.
Pollard said that the county does not have to provide all things to everybody. Brantley Easton said that the proposed tax just becomes another financial challenge for his family. But the county did have some supporters. In particular, several people spoke out for spending for the Mental Wellness Strategic Plan. Shauna Wiest, Executive Director of Connect, said that there is a critical need for services aimed at young people.
As you know, the CDC came out with a report last week that suicide has increased 141% among our youth in Utah. And of those, 90% of those youth had an underlying mental illness. And just looking at what is going on in Utah, only 20% of those youth are getting the treatment they need. That means 80% of our youth are not getting the services. So then we'll see them in the criminal justice system. We'll see them in crisis centers like UNI. And if they don't get served when they're children, they will carry this when they're an adult.
Lola Bielbrox, a Browns Canyon resident, said she would rather pay the tax increase than see the county seek revenues from more development on the east side. Previously, County Manager Tom Fisher had said without the tax hike, the county may have to, for instance, eliminate the county library at Colville. Given that, Colville resident Linda Byrne said she would gladly pay the property tax increase.
I have a modest home, and I am thrilled to give you my $27 so you can keep the library in my town. So thank you for considering this, because it's well needed. We haven't had a tax increase for a very long time, and I'm happy to pay my $3 a month so that I can have a library and health services here in town. So I just want to thank you and urge you to pass it.
It's Colville resident Linda Byrne there. Joining me now on the phone from the Summit County Council, Chris Robinson. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie.
So, again, this was a unanimous decision. The council decided to go for the full 27% increase. Why not just the 15% increase to get you where you needed to be with your fund balances being drawn down?
the 15% didn't really affect fund balances. It just allowed us to maintain the level of service that we have and to achieve our other objectives, but basically run at right on the borderline of the 5% minimum required by the state. And so we thought it prudent to go with the additional 12% increase in those two tax rates in order to allow us to add $1.6 million to the fund balances, $900,000 to general and $700,000 to the municipal fund.
Yeah, and of course you heard from some saying, you know, why are we providing so much service? Do we really need it?
Well, it's like someone said, where are you spending this money? Well, it's a 200-page budget. You know, we are providing customary and normal services for the most part. Public safety, roads, you know, the community development, those are all necessary functions of government. This community believes in sustainability. They want us to do our part to help with climate change. They want us to take care of the environment. We have this new strategic effect of mental wellness and substance abuse that's topic du jour worldwide, and we're addressing that. We have affordable housing and transit and a myriad of important needs. And so you weigh those needs against the backdrop of our having a very high tax base and a very, very low tax rate. And it gives us the ability for a very modest lift to be able to keep doing it and to maintain fund balances that are well in a comfort zone. That's why we did what we did.
What about the suggestion, though, that we pay a minimal charge for the bus service? Why does it have to be free?
You know, I don't know that I have the perfect answer to that. I think that, first of all, a minimal charge is going to bring in a minimal amount. And then it's a question of how elastic that is. Do we then discourage ridership and defeat the whole purpose for why we have a bus district, a transit district, which is to get people out of individual cars? And so I don't think that I have. I don't know that I have all the answers to that, but I think that's part of the answer.
And what's your response to the gentleman who said that the county council is bowing down to Park City and the Democratic stronghold?
I think that Park City's bowing down to us. Well, what I mean by that is that we have Park City has an economic engine that and has the lion's share of the tax base I mentioned that allows us to finance a lot of things that if Park City didn't exist and it were just another hamlet like Francis or Camas, we would have a totally different situation here. And I don't think Park City's dictating to us. As far as the Democratic stronghold, you know, I think most of the decisions that the council has made in my 9 years of being in office have not been partisan. There's, you know, Tea Partiers or, extreme conservatives that may think we ought to do something different, but I think we're pretty mainstream.
All right. Well, the council session wound up going until 11 o'clock last night, in particular getting to an approval for the Canyon Spa amended master plan in the assessment area. So is this the most significant overhaul of the master plan then since 1999?
I think so. It's the most significant that I've been a party to. It's the culmination of, up to a couple of years' worth of work. And I think it's going to provide a lot of benefits and solve a lot of problems.
During the public hearing, almost all of the comment was from property owners along Red Pine Road. If we understand this correctly, the owners say they bought residences on what they expected to be a county road in the mountains. Now the amendment is putting a lot of density into the resort core right next to them that will put two accesses on Red Pine into their neighborhood. They also said that they're entitled to a 50-foot buffer off of Red Pine. The council approved that master plan. Did you make any changes then to respond to those property owners?
We went deep on that topic, Leslie, and in the end, there weren't any changes made. The 50-foot buffer is not in question. The question were the property owners in the Canyon Spa, those that want to develop, did they have the right to use Red Pine Road, and was it forbidden in the development agreement? And the residents were arguing that the 50-foot buffer prohibited curb cuts, access, in other words, onto Red Pine Road. And when we went through all the facts, we determined that wasn't the case. And we, in fact, found a recording from the 2012 meeting and some other documents that shed further light on that. And so we think we did the right thing there. We're sensitive that they're used to having very little traffic there, and there will now be some 44 townhomes that will have two accesses onto Red Pine.
So the voluntary assessment area will be bonding for some $23.5 million. If the TCFC properties in this assessment district fail to pay off the bond in 20 years, what happens?
Then the bondholders foreclose their assessment lien on those properties, and their sole recourse is to look to the value of those properties.
Then the spending by the assessment area, including some $14 million to buy this LV6 parcel from Intermountain Healthcare to provide a workforce housing complex. Why is it that the county owns the land, and who would be the landlord?
The way it works is these assessment bonds, the assets acquired by them need to be held by a government agency. And in this case, it's Summit County. And the LV6, that acreage, will be purchased with the proceeds from the bonds. Title to the property will be held by Summit County. And there will be a ground lease executed between the county and the CVMA, the Canyons Village Master Association. And that the CVMA will then build the 107 employees on that, and will pay the county $1 a year in rent. And then at the end of 20 years, there will be four renewal options for 20 years each, or a purchase option at no cost.
So, again, this is money that's being paid for by those properties.
Correct.
County money.
Correct.
Yeah. Also, another item brought up, perhaps a deal with Park City. IHC said that it would cut the cost of purchasing the property if their affordable housing obligation to Park City could be placed in this employee housing. I think they had some units available at Park City Heights, yeah?
I don't know about Park City Heights. I think the situation is that IHC is required to provide another 6 or 7 units of workforce housing, and they haven't done so. They have an outstanding obligation, and that if that obligation can be satisfied on this LV6 parcel by the CVMA, that they would discount the price. IHC would discount the sales price.
All right, and then TCFC builds the housing.
Not TCFC, the CVMA.
CVMA.
Would build those additional 7 units or some number like that in addition to the 1,107 housing for 1,107 employees. It'd be 7 additional units.
Okay.
On top of how many units 1,107 equates to.
There was also an addition to the agenda. Council approved a letter to the Central Wasatch Commission, formerly known as Mountain Accord, asking that Summit County have a seat on the commission. This was supposedly because the commission is considering putting Alta on the panel. Why were you motivated to write the letter?
Well, we would have liked to have been a commission member in the beginning, and at that time it was desired to keep it smaller, and so there were only five commissioners, founding commissioners, plus two others, one from UDOT and one from the Wasatch Back, which became Andy Bierman. And then in the last month or so, they've decided to liberalize that a little bit more, and they're considering entry of a representative from Alta. And so we decided to see if we could get one as well, get a seat at the table.
So you don't think it's
enough? Park City.
You don't think it's enough that Andy Bierman represents the Wasatch Back in the group?
I think that it's very helpful to have Andy Bierman do whatever he's willing to do. But I think it doesn't take away from what he can do if we have another seat.
All right. So you're going to the commission with a request on Monday, the 18th, that they accept that representative would be you?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add, Chris?
It was a long but good meeting, culmination of a lot of, you know, watershed meeting, things coming together that we'd worked on for a long time. So thanks for all those that attended.
Okay. Chris, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson, KPCW News Time, now 8:30.
I'm Jim Weber, Park City resident, owner of Foothill Oriental Rugs, supporting KPCW for 25 years. Our Salt Lake City store actually sells to rug dealers throughout the U.S. We have a huge selection and encourage our customers to live with our carpets in their home prior to purchase to ensure it is the right piece. We are located 2 minutes north of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive. FoothillOrientalRugs.com.
Support for KPCW programming comes from Sammy's Bistro and Bonanza Drive, open daily at 11 a.m., sammysbistro.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Well, the Park City Planning Commission was scheduled to vote on the Treasure Hill conditional use application by the end of the year. Now, with a last-minute offer by Park City to buy down half of the density for $30 million, the Planning Commission last night agreed to hold off on that vote and allow the community to have a say in the future look of Treasure Hill. In the studio with me, I have the chairman of the Park City Planning Commission, Adam Strong. Good morning.
Morning.
So I guess perhaps the biggest surprise of the night was that you agreed to stay on through the January meetings with all of the other commissioners. Reluctantly.
I did a few things last night I said I wouldn't do. You know, what are you going to do? You're going to leave people in the lurch, and you're being asked to stay on by your elected officials, and you've done all this work, and you're just going to drop the bag and walk out of the room. I didn't think that was good.
Yeah. So why is the city asking the Planning Commission to freeze the process? I mean, why is it important that the Planning Commission doesn't vote on this just yet?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. You know, the first is, the mayors have asked us not to, and I take it that that's because of the ins and outs of the negotiations, although I don't know that for sure. But when you're asked by your duly elected mayors not to do something and to take a particular course of action, it's a little bit tough for me as an appointed non-elected official to go over their heads and do something anyway. And I didn't feel comfortable, and nor did the other planning commissioners feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah, I guess I just don't understand the legalese of this, perhaps. I mean, I don't understand why the negotiation and public vetting still can't take place in spite of a planning commission vote. Or does that vote somehow then taint the process?
Well, I think it does. I mean, I think... And it taints the process against the potential outcome that the two mayors think they can reach. I mean, think of the end game of a vote by the Planning Commission. Best circumstance, as Jody Burnett, our special counsel, told us last night, under the hardest line we could possibly take, there was no way we could ever get to a number like 250,000 square feet or 300,000 square feet, which are what the mayors are proposing. And so taking a vote and getting to, say, an 800,000 square foot version of the currently proposed project while at the expense of jeopardizing the negotiations to get to a 250-some-odd square foot outcome, to me just seemed like a risk not worth taking, and I don't think the other planning commissioners did either. I mean, I hope the neighbors understand that the impacts associated with those two choices are very different.
I want to talk a little bit more about that, but Mayor Jack Thomas told me yesterday that under a new development agreement, the new Treasure Project would be 70% smaller than. How do we know that? Because we haven't seen anything.
Well, we know it because, first of all, they have bought down half of the UEs from the original MPD. So I think that takes a little bit of explanation. First of all, the original MPD had roughly 400,000 square feet worth of vested space, space that our special counsel Jody Burnett said was set in stone, something 400,000 feet or greater was going in up there, much greater. From that point, they bought down or are proposing to buy down half of that. Now, that immediately puts us at about a 200,000 square foot estimate, which is by far less than anything or vote the Planning Commission could result in. Now, what they are trying to figure out is, you know, the old fly in the ointment, what's going to be the back of house? Now, under a reasonable estimate, as Commissioner Tim gave us last night, and Commissioner Tim is a developer himself who's done many projects similar in size and scope to the ones we've dealt with, he says you add, you know, roughly 15% for back of house, which gets us 15 to 25%, which gets us to a number that is roughly 250,000 square feet. So that's how we get there.
So what do you need to know before you think the city, you know, holds off and see what comes this November? I mean, what needs to, for you personally?
Well, I think the in January is kind of going to be the time when we need to have the specifics. So what we're waiting for now is for Mark Harrington, the city attorney, and the two mayors to figure out what is going to be the final square footages, what's going to be the caps and where those are going to go. And we need to see, you know, the parking and the meeting space and so forth. We need to get that all by January. The November timeframe is for the bond issue. So if by January, we don't have a specific agreement that the planning commissioners are comfortable with, then we vote it down and we go on with our vote on the CUP application. My hunch is that they will come back to us with enough specificity because I think it's in both parties' interest to have that. Now, assuming they have enough specificity and the Planning Commission in January votes to ratify what would take the form of an amendment to the original NPD, that deal would go to the voters in November for the bond election. If the bond election fails, which I personally hope it doesn't, but if it does, then the existing CUP application would be taken back up again. And although it's not an ideal scenario because I'll be gone by then and Commissioner Joyce May will be gone by then as well, you'll still have three, maybe even four existing planning commissioners still on the commission. And this record is as full and complete a record as I've ever seen. The minutes have been taken verbatim. These haven't been hand-taken minutes. These have been recorded minutes. So the minutes are available verbatim, and the staff reports and position papers from the applicant are about as clear as they could possibly be. So I do not think it's a tough job for a new planning commissioner coming on to pick up where this planning commission leaves off, especially with the help of three, maybe four existing planning commissioners.
So we're still talking about a 250,000 square foot boutique hotel, 18 single family homes. These are this is definitely still going to have an impact on all of the issues that the Planning Commission has been struggling with to mitigate: excavation, traffic, noise, environmental impacts. So you're just saying we'll just have less of them and for a shorter amount of time?
Well, first of all, on the numbers, and, you know, Jack and Andy and Matt Dias can correct me here, but my understanding is that all in, it's roughly 250,000. So we're not talking about a 250,000 square foot hotel. We're talking plus 18 residences. We're talking somewhere close, you know, gross all in that neighborhood. Now, you know, those numbers are really rough at this point, but just based on the buy down and the UE equivalents in square footage, as I did the math earlier for you just now, that's kind of where I'm seeing this going. So just to get those numbers out there. Second of all, the impacts, part of your question, the impacts will still be looked at very, very closely. But, you know, that will be looked at through the lens of what the impacts could be if we don't do this. And also, it should be remembered that when the impacts are lesser, typically the mitigation is easier. So, you know, it's a lot easier to mitigate the impacts of, say, a hotel with a quarter of as many parking spaces as is proposed currently than it would be to mitigate something with as many parking spaces as are proposed now. I mean, that's just one example.
Now, did you hear from the Park City Institute about what they'd like to see as part of this? Because they've also been working with the applicant.
Yeah, I haven't gotten any specifics from Park City Institute or Terrior. You know, I think they'd like to have some sort of space for some use, but my understanding is at this point they've got nothing.
Okay. In terms of most of those who commented were for the proposed plan. Some were skeptical, saying that we've been here before. So what's different this time around, if anything, for you?
This time around, we've got a signed tentative agreement to buy down half of the MPD, the UEs. We've never had that before. We've never been this close. And that was what I was hoping would happen by last night and did when the press release came out earlier this week. That was the sort of ironclad deal. Well, not ironclad, but at least an indication that these guys were going to get to a deal. And so when I saw that, I thought, okay, this is not just puffing and wishful thinking. These people are genuinely negotiating and are willing to sign a document to such.
And this may be repeating our earlier conversation, but we did hear from former Mayor Dana Williams addressing the commission, saying he was concerned about the process and due process, and he pointed out this is the fourth time that the developers have changed their tactics, and he asked the Planning Commission to make a decision on the CUP before you and the applicant, and then have the applicant submit a new application. Why do you not agree with that process?
Well, first of all, we're closer this time than we've ever been before, as I just mentioned. And second of all, you know, Dana asked us to stop this process back in 2009 so that he could negotiate with them. And I don't see anything different now. You know, I guess I would ask, you know, put yourself in your own shoes back in 2009. And if you thought you were close to a deal, what would you do?
All right. The item, again, continued to a date uncertain, but we've got, boy, a list of the number of meetings. I guess the first one, December 21st, for the City Council to present the terms of the settlement agreement. Is that what we're talking about before the council?
Yeah. So my understanding, and you know, please do some follow-up interviews of people to see if this is right or not, but my understanding is that the City Council would vote on a settlement agreement in early to mid-January. And then that settlement agreement would go hand in hand with an amendment to the MPD. And that would be, that amendment to the MPD would be what the Planning Commission voted on on January 17th.
Okay, so that's the final date in this, the 17th. We should know where we're going from here.
I sure hope so. I mean, I get it that, you know, it's going to take some meetings to get this right, and I don't want to short circuit any of the negotiations or the Planning Commission's input, and certainly not the City Council's input. But, you know, I don't want the Planning Commission to be an impediment to this either. And there's always going to be specifics to a deal that you wish were different, and you can start to nitpick. And that's when you start to be more of an impediment than a help. And I need to figure out where that fine line is. But we'll just have to work on it.
Okay. You're not a free man just quite yet.
No.
Okay. Adam, anything else you want to add?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thanks for your time. Park City Planning Commission Chairman Adam Strawn. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:45, good morning. Well, with the election of Andy Bierman as mayor, his seat on the Park City Council will be vacant as of January. The City Council will name his replacement after interviewing the applicants. That process now underway in the studio with details on how to apply. I have Park City election official Michelle Kellogg along with community engagement manager Linda Jager. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Michelle, let's talk a little bit about the timeline on this. Andy's resignation is effective when?
As of December 27th, after all of our city council meetings are over, that's when he will resign. So we cannot accept applications before his resignation.
Okay. Have you had some inquiry? I mean, do we know some people who are interested?
A few people have inquired. And I just refer them to our election page on our website. That's where you can get an application and start, you know, pondering the questions and filling it out. I can only accept the applications between December 27th and January 5th at noon. That's the deadline for returning the applications to me.
Okay. So since nobody can officially apply, no one has applied at this point to talk about.
Exactly.
And in terms of the requirements then to even be considered, what are those?
So they're the same as if you were running for office. You have to be 18 and a U.S. citizen and a Park City resident and not the Park City limits, the official Park City limit resident, and a registered voter.
So is there an application that needs to be filled out? Or
Yes. So you can come to my office and get one, or it's online on the election information page. It has a lot of questions for the – there's also a waiver to do a background check, which is common with our other boards when appointments are being made to those.
Yeah, what are you looking for? I mean, on the background check.
Well, the legal department usually takes care of that. I'm sure just, you know, maybe criminal history or just want to make sure you're an upstanding citizen.
And in terms of this person, so they would be appointed at a meeting in January?
Yes, the January 23rd meeting.
All right. And then they would serve a term, what, through the end of the year or through Andy's term?
Through the end of Andy's term, which expires the first Thursday in January of 2020.
All right. And is that something that will be considered, whether or not this person would run for re-election, or are you just looking for somebody to serve for a couple of years?
That could be one of their questions, but I don't think it would be a deciding factor.
All right. Linda, you're hosting an open house to give prospective applicants more information on what's involved. So tell us when and where that is.
Sure. That'll be next week on Tuesday the 19th at the Park City Library at the third floor from 6 to 7 p.m. We will have council members Becca Gerber and Tim Henney there to provide some insight on what it takes to serve on city council, time commitment, and so on. And then Michelle will be there to go over the, again, requirements and talk about boundary of residency, et cetera. And then Mark Harrington will also be there to just offer some perspective on legalities and issues. And we'll entertain Q&A. And it's a great opportunity for folks that are curious about running on council or serving on council, and encourage everyone to come out.
Yeah. In terms of pay, do you know how much a council person gets paid?
Shell? I'm trying to remember where we're at this day. I can get back to you on that.
I believe they get about $1,800 a month.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the time that is needed to serve on the council? I mean, I know Becca Gerber has a full-time job. I don't know. Maybe she's cut it down to part-time given all of the meetings that you guys have had. But what I mean, what is it? What is the reality of?
You know, I think it's different for everyone. It is definitely a significant time commitment. I remember Councilwoman Nan Worrell was talking about when she first was elected to the position, thinking, you know, you can do that with the job as well. And it was difficult to balance full-time work with serving on council. So I think it's really up to the individual. And definitely Thursdays is a significant, are a significant time commitment. Council meetings can start anywhere from 1 to 3 p.m. and go as late as 9 or 10 on Thursdays. And plus time to review the packets, community events, and so on and so forth. So it really is a significant time commitment.
Yeah. I mean, are there, do you have to attend so many meetings?
Yes. I think there are some that you can miss with pre-arrangements. But yes, I think it's rare that a council member will miss a council meeting.
Okay. People can come ask a lot more questions. And again, on Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m.
Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m., Park City Library and third floor. And we look forward to seeing everyone. And you can also find the information online on our website.
Okay. Linda, Michelle, thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Thanks.
KPCW News Time, 8:51. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio with an update from the Youth Sports Alliance, Executive Director Emily Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we're hoping to check in with one of our athletes in the hour here. It looks like.
Yep.
Jeannie, do I have you there?
Hello?
Jeannie, okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's just start with Jeannie. This is Jeannie Crane Mousy. She's calling in from where, Jeannie?
I am actually in Breckenridge, Colorado. I was competing in the Detour yesterday.
Okay, in what sport?
I do half pipe skiing.
Okay, how did you do?
I did pretty well for myself. Detour is a pretty hard competition, so there's a lot of really good athletes here from around the world, and I put down a run that I was really proud of.
Well, great. So did you make it into the finals?
No, I unfortunately did not, but there's 22 girls here and only 8 make it into finals, so it's pretty hard.
Yeah, that's tough. How old are you?
I am 21.
Okay. And you're an athlete that has received some scholarship funding through the Youth Sports Alliance. What has that allowed you to do, that money?
Well, a part of that money is allowing me to be here right now for this competition. I was also in Copper Mountain, Colorado last week for the first U.S. Grand Prix. And then I'll be, after Christmas, heading to Snowmass for Snowmass Grand Prix and then Mammoth Grand Prix. So being granted that scholarship money really helps me be able to travel to these places and have the coaching that I need to be able to participate and have a good competition against all of these girls from high-level national teams.
Yeah. Now, are you competing with one of the teams, or are you just kind of an independent?
I'm American, so I compete under the U.S. team, but I'm not part of the U.S. team. I'm solely part of the Park City Ski and Snowboard Club under Chris Haslock's department.
Okay, so that's where you're getting your coaching from then?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, again, you get to come home, and then you head back after Christmas then for more comps?
Yes.
Okay, well, good luck to you, Jeannie. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
And let's turn it back to Emily Fisher. Again, she's one of how many athletes that you help support?
Yeah, so this fall we made the first draw on the Stein Erickson Opportunity Endowment, and that went to support 71 local athletes in our local clubs who are now all on their Olympic journey.
Yeah, and they're selected by how well they're competing?
Well, so every sport has different criteria. Some sports do it through World Cups. Some have other qualifying competitions. And then some sports do have a true Olympic trials where a winner takes all, or it's just the results from those competitions. But as we look at our local clubs here in Park City, we now are counting that we have 93 athletes that have come through those programs that are in the running for Olympic spots. So those are your neighbors, your babysitters, and the people you see at the grocery store. So really exciting for Team Park City.
Well, the Winter Olympics are like some 50 days out. What is it that the YSA, if anything, is doing to prepare for the Olympic Games?
Yeah, so we are just sort of tracking and following our local athletes to see who is going to end up in Pyeongchang. And some will be representing the U.S. and some will be representing other countries, which is also exciting. So we're going to try to figure out, we're working on how to track and follow and cheer for those local athletes. And see athletes like Will Rhodes came through our Park City Nordic Ski Club, and he has received scholarshiping in the past from the Youth Sports Alliance. And now he is the top-ranked ski jumper in the U.S. and will compete at Olympic trials at the Utah Olympic Park here just December 30th and 31st.
Right. So any planned viewing parties at this point? Any YSA viewing parties, I guess I should say?
We are still working on the details of those, but hopefully we'll have some really fun community events to celebrate, you know, that Team Park City, all of our athletes that are going to make it to Pyeongchang.
Okay. You've also got a community sledding day coming up. When and where is this going to be?
Actually, our community sledding day was Sunday. Oh. So it was last Sunday, December 10th. It was at Gorgoza Sledding Park. And what was really cool to see is the community partnerships all come together. So Whole Foods, Backcountry, and North Face all collaborated to get our 100 scholarship kids in our Get Out and Play program, brand new North Face jackets and pants. Rosignol provides the gear for those athletes during the program. Switchback Sports makes sure it's all set up correctly. And then, of course, Vail, Epic Promise, provides the lift tickets and the lessons, and Deer Valley Resort and Utah Olympic Park. And it's so just really neat to see all those community partners come together. And we just celebrated that on Sunday by giving those scholarship kids a free day of tubing.
Yeah, fun. So, I mean, in terms of your Get Out and Play numbers, are you seeing that grow then every year, huh?
Yeah, every year it grows. And we have athletes try all different sports. And then our Activate program, which we started at Ecker and then Treasure this year, is growing as well. And we have a session that begins on January 19th, and it's going to be cross-country skiing, yoga, and I believe Egyptian theater at Treasure Mountain, and then cross-country skiing, photography, and Egyptian theater at Ecker.
Okay. People can still register for those then?
Yep. They can still register for those Activate programs.
Okay. And I guess you had a final wrap for the Jan's Winter Welcome this year then?
Yes, I have a final number for you. So Jan's Winter Welcome was our most successful ever, and we raised $534,000.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
So after seeing it this year, any changes that you think you'll be proposing?
For Jan's Winter Welcome? No, I think it's just such a great event, and really the kickoff to winter. And again, just have all of our community partners and teams come together to support all of those athletes and their Olympic dreams.
Yeah, a well-oiled machine is what I was going to say.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, yep. Emily, anything else?
Nope, that's really it. Just keep your eyes out for some ways to track and follow those 93 kids as they make their way to Pyeongchang.
Okay, look forward to it. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.